The Charge and the Storm by An Owomoyela, narrated by Sunila Nankani.
Petra was already in a bad mood, not that that said much. Her good moods had become increasingly apocryphal over recent years, but today there was a lightning storm outside her Faraday cage of an office, and she could feel it like a second psyche, inhuman and insentient, and laid over her thoughts. And today, when she walked into her office, there was a familiar man sitting on the chair before her desk. Ahmad. She stopped, a step in from the doorway. Ahmad turned, looking back at her over his shoulder. He had a small device in one hand, and while Petra could sense the stream of information flowing from it, the mental interference from the lightning storm drowned it out.
"I've jammed your communication lines," Ahmad said.
Petra gave him a withering look and headed toward her desk.
"You think that'll keep me from contacting security?"
"For a couple of minutes, yes,"
Ahmad said.
"We need to talk, Sulay Tabov."
"No," Petra said. "You need to be arrested." She settled into her desk chair, bringing her interface up with a sweep of her hand. He had jammed her communications lines. The bastard. Clever bastard. She had a very nice system, full of redundancies and adaptive compensators. But he'd always been clever. Probably always been a bastard, too, though she'd looked past that once.
"It's about Nash," Ahmad said.
"He needs to be arrested, too."
Ahmad made a frustrated noise.
"Look," he said, "knowing there's no love lost between the two of you, and knowing that I would rather hang myself by my thumbs from the lightning towers than come ask you for help, I expect you to know what it means that I'm here and I'm asking. This is about Nash's life."
A cold anger sparked into being at the bottom of Petra's stomach, ringing against the lightning she could feel outside. There was no sound of thunder in here, no electrical interference except the noise inside her head. But her fingers twitched, as though urging her to become a conduit. A lightning tower herself. She could string Ahmad up by his thumbs right here on her own.
"I have," she said, "on multiple occasions, attempted to help Nash fix his life. On the last occasion, he sold Sioux secrets to violent revolutionaries and got my wife kidnapped. I'm not interested in trying again."
"Yeah, great," Ahmad said.
He stood up from the chair, almost started pacing, then caught himself. Petra watched with a knife-sharp interest, taking in the tension in his shoulders, the tremor concealed in his hands. Ahmad liked to think he was better at being unreadable than he was.
"Leaving aside your ignorant and well-intentioned efforts to turn him into a good little colonizee, this isn't about fixing his life. It's about saving it. Are you going to help? Or do you honestly think he should die for screwing up and screwing you over?"
"Yes," Petra thought. But it was a knee-jerk thought, more spite than sense. And it was a pretty damn big screw-over, her brain retorted. And it took a moment for her to blink and realize what Ahmad had said.
"What?"
she managed, the anger still smoldering but neatly derailed. Ahmad glared at her, then took a deep breath.
"The Sioux," he said, voice bitter and brittle, "have decided that he's a detriment to the colony and should be excised. However, they will accept his abject submission to a citizen in good standing to whom reparations are owed, in lieu of his death."
The anger in Petra's gut gave a long, uneasy turn. No one else is willing to speak for him?
No one the Sioux are inclined to listen to.
Doesn't surprise me.
She watched Ahmad, As an afterthought, she gestured away her interface. Right or wrong, and she felt that it was wrong, for all that knowing that didn't stop her. She wasn't going to fix the lines, call in the authorities, turn Ahmad in. You came to me because you had nowhere else to go. Ahmad didn't bother confirming her comment. And what makes you think I'd agree to this? Ahmad's fingers curled around his jammer.
You used to be friends.
Used to be.
You're not that heartless, Ahmad said.
He was right. The Sioux had a casual disregard for life. If the life in question didn't serve their ambitions, they had no compunctions about casting it aside. Petra, human, balked at that. Yes, she resented Nash, hated him, it felt like. She would have liked to see him suffer for screwing her over years ago. Seeing him die was a little much. Well, the word left a taste like ozone in the back of her throat. It very nearly made her sick to her stomach until she shoved it away, hunted out the control she'd developed to turn down her own feelings.
Then?
What jurisdictor has him? Some of the tension leached out of Ahmad's shoulders. Not all.
The information is here, he said,
and gestured a data sigil to her interface. Petra could feel it blink into availability. Text, no more than a few lines. Ahmad said, all the information. Petra heard, everything you need to know. And her fingers itched for the comm line again. One call, and she could very easily ruin Ahmad's life, if not end it. Him and Nash, always so eager to use her. Sudam opportunists, both. She accepted the transfer. Ahmad backed toward the door, the jammer in his hand coming up like a talisman.
I'm sorry about your wife, he offered. I liked her. We never intended for anything to happen to her.
Ex-wife now, Petra said. And what you intended doesn't matter much, does it? Ahmad made a noise like he was the one who should resent all of this. In his mind, maybe so.
Can't say it's been a pleasure seeing you, Sulai Tabov, he said. Shouldn't happen again.
Then he vanished into the halls. After a moment, the comm lines cleared. The jurisdictor module was in a part of the colony Petra never visited. Other, more skilled, biological Sioux makers maintained the physical mechanisms of that part of the colony, and there was nothing in that area that Petra needed to concern herself with personally. The organs that recycled air and water and processed waste back around into nourishment, raw material intake from the ruined outside world, corpse handling. And the jurisdictors, where aberrants against the colony peace were held and, if necessary, excised. The Sioux had a particular sense of utility. One Sioux was waiting outside the cluster, her antennules moving in the still air. Sulai Tabov, she said, each word humming out of the speech synthesizer embedded on the underside of her head. How exactly all the Sioux managed to recognize her and her exact place in society was an open question, and one Petra didn't bother asking. She had her suspicions, but it didn't matter much, so long as their system worked. Unfortunately, she had no such skill when it came to the Sioux. Fortunately, the Sioux hierarchy was stiff enough that she knew what rank would be standing here, acting as custodian to the condemned. Sudeig, she said. You have Sudeig Nash Carter? The Sioux gestured assent. You would like to take ownership of the aberrant? Saying, no, I'd like nothing of the sort, but I seem to be obliged to, would mean that the Sioux would only hear the no. I would, Petra said. The Sioux didn't question the statement or ask for any justification. Petra had standing among the Sioux. Petra was owed reparations from Nash. Petra, therefore, had the right to claim his life. The Sioux never questioned the exercise of rights. The Sioux did not believe that if one had the right to do something, that thing could be morally questionable. Sometimes Petra wished she could see it the same way. This way, Sulai Tabov, the Sioux said, and unfolded her legs beneath her. At her full height, she stood nearly half a meter taller than Petra, an armored mass through whom hummed a faint bioelectricity that Petra could feel at the corner of her mind, stronger than a human's, but too faint and too subtle to control. The Sioux led her back into the module. Only one of the cells was occupied, though another had been sealed off, and through its translucence, Petra could see a dark shape, rounded toward the extremities, and just about the size of her own torso. Someone, human or Sioux, who had been excised already, their body being digested by the biomat cell walls. She turned away from it. The aberrant is here, the Sioux announced, pressing claws and her tarsal pad into a receptor. It sensed her energy, or her pheromones, or simply pressure, though Petra doubted it was simply pressure, and a membrane dilated open, revealing the figure inside. Nash was looking worse for wear, Petra thought. The years hadn't treated him well, or maybe it was just sitting in a cell that might devour him that had him looking gray of mien, thin and uneasy. His head snapped up when the membrane retracted, and a flood of emotion passed through his expression. Mortification, horror, desperate relief. Petra. Ahmad found me, Petra said. She could hear her voice resonating in her head, oddly cold, almost alien. There was a cold pressure constricting her lungs, too. She didn't let herself think about it. Come on. Then she turned on her heel and walked out again. It took Nash a moment to scramble to his feet and follow, the Sioux coming along after him. How did you end up with a death sentence? Petra asked. The Sioux didn't give a damn about life, but out of respect for their human constituents, they usually didn't jump straight to excision from the colony. Not these days. The fact that they had with Nash, a man who, despite his many faults, was neither violent nor destructive, suggested that he'd annoyed them more than he'd ever annoyed her, and that was a feat. Nash hurried to keep up with her, trying to put a few paces distance between himself and the Sioux custodian. I wasn't expecting you to come save me, he said. Neither was I. Petra increased her own pace, focusing on the crisp clip of every footfall. The rhythm gave her something to focus on that wasn't the lightning storm and wasn't Nash. What did you do, Nash? It's complicated, he said. And then they were at the gate, and the Sioux moved in front of them and took a collar from a cache on the wall. She regarded Petra with characteristic nonchalance. I will put this on the aberrant, she said, for you. Petra nodded acquiescence. Nash stiffened, but he didn't resist as the band fastened around his neck, the inner lining adhering to his skin with a soft shup. In typical situations, I would format the collar myself, the Sioux said. However, you possess the skills to format it yourself, Sulai. You are free to request that I format it for you. Thank you, no, Petra said. I understand the technology.
You are free to return him for excision at any time. You are to format the collar before removing him from the jurisdictor. May I serve you otherwise?
Petra gestured her to leave, and the Sioux made an answering movement of assent and acknowledgement. Then she turned and walked away, folding herself down into repose at the door again.
Petra turned to Nash, who looked back at her with as much mistrust as he'd shown the Sioux. Unsurprising. To listen to Ahmad, Petra was half Sioux anyway, and she knew who Nash had thrown his lot in with. After a moment, though, he forced himself to relax, put on a smile that was as fake as anything Petra had seen.
Try not to electrocute me.
It will be an effort, Petra said, and took the collar in her hands. She could feel it resonating against the colony around them, feel it asking the colony walls for information, catching the signals the walls sent out. The colony was never quiet, to Petra. It was always murmuring to itself, bright paths of directed energy and a haze of signals. But the loudest things to her senses were the flashes of lightning, carving brilliant but transient pathways through the atmosphere. The electricity running through the channels in the colony was dull by comparison. Hard to focus on, and the collar was fainter still. And Nash's closeness made it hard to concentrate, too. They'd enjoyed an easy physicality when they'd been on good terms. A clap on the back, a nudge with the elbow, a warm presence against the flank, or in repose against the chest. Now, Petra couldn't help but feel that she shouldn't be standing so near, that Nash might try to seize her by the arm, or pick her pocket, or loop an arm over her shoulders. Try to trick her into believing that they were still friends. She closed her eyes and wrote permissions into the collar. Every circuit in the collar, live or dead, mapped onto one of the halls in the colony. All she needed to do was energize the ones she needed. Like trying to draw a line of sand in a statue of glass capillaries while wind howled through cracks in the habitat. But she got the basics done with the same determination she applied to all of her work. The lightning storms were nothing new, nor were the headaches or the brain fog that accompanied them. And while it might slow her down, it wouldn't incapacitate her. She let her hands drop and stepped back, away from the sound of Nash's breath, the heat of his body.
"Dare I ask where I'm allowed to go?" Nash asked, with a kind of wary wryness.
"For now," Petra said, "the hall's from here to my quarters. I requisitioned a room across from mine. You can go from there to the baths, the libraries, and the commissary, using the most direct routes between all four. I'll figure out more later."
"Thanks," Nash said.
By his tone, he wasn't sure that was the correct response. She'd saved him from death and put him under house arrest. Petra wasn't sure there was a correct response. "I have work to do," she said. "The room will be open for you. We'll talk later." She turned, and Nash said,
"Wait."
And she turned back, already seething. She hadn't expected to get away that easily, no. But it would have been nice. At least Nash caught that and made an appeasing gesture.
"Sorry. I don't mean to keep you. But there's stuff in my lodgings out by the ship corridor. If I could,
I'll ask a Sudeig to get it," Petra said. "Forgive me if I don't feel like letting you go back there."
"Right,"
Nash said. Petra watched him. "The collar will kill you if you stray too far from the path."
"Right,"
Nash said again, and made a stiff, Sioux gesture of apology. It had an overtone of self-parody to it.
"I won't delay you any longer."
Petra could have said something to that. She didn't.
She met Ka'a at the juncture between the human first cluster and the Sioux brooding Cluster 9. Ka'a gave no indication of how long she'd been waiting. She only crouched with an unconcerned stillness and with the smug self-assurance all Sioux seemed to carry with them. Petra drew her fingers down from her forehead to her chin to indicate respect. Hello, Sulai Ka'a. How are we operating? Ka'a echoed the gesture. We have erected 7 additional towers along the polar perimeter, she said. She flicked her claws toward the wall, which beaded out a display and lit up with graphs. We have an excess of energy, Sulai Petra. Now we must craft it. It interests me to create a new habitat in the third cluster. Do you agree? It would behoove the colony, Petra said. Third cluster wasn't yet overcrowded. The Sioux would never let it get to that point. But it was coming close, and Ka'a, at least, saw creating more space as the natural answer. Being a human cluster, it would do more for colony harmony than the other answer, which was to curtail population growth outright. In a race like the Sioux, where all reproduction was hierarchically decided, such an edict was non-notable. Among the human population, it was a call for rioting. Or for just the kind of separatism that Ahmad and his ilk espoused. I'll follow, Petra said. And Ka'a uncurled her legs and paced off in third cluster's direction. Slowly for a Sioux, in consideration of Petra's shorter and fewer legs. The Sioux had no real use for small talk, and so they walked mostly in silence. They passed one of the human commissaries and a number of dwellings, nearly all empty, as First Cluster housed those who worked directly with the Sioux, and the Sioux valued productive work more than they valued much else. A hall or two into Third Cluster, they passed a human woman with 2 boys who looked at Petra walking stride along stride with Ka'a and seemed to come to her own unvoiced conclusions about that. Humans and Sioux lived together, but the pace and activities of their lives were so different as to make living together academic. There were only so many positions where a human would work alongside the Sioux. Ka'a turned her head and made a superior greeting. Hurem Omotoso, she said. Your children grow well? The woman's eyes softened a bit, and she made a gesture of subordinate greeting. Though the quirk of her lips, an expression interpretable by Petra but not Ka'a, suggested she was playing along with propriety rather than moved by any genuine submission. They do. Thank you for asking, Sulai, she said, then looked to Petra. Sulai? Petra Tabov, Petra said, and extended a hand. Omotoso took it. First time in third cluster? Omotoso asked. We don't often rate 2 makers. We're building an expansion, Petra said. Long time coming, Omotoso said, and made an offhand gesture of appropriate respect toward Ka'a. Petra gestured recognition and acceptance. The Sioux didn't understand speaking like this across hierarchy, but that Petra accepted it satisfied them. So long as Petra gestured acceptance, Omotoso would not face any penalties for hierarchical transgression. It nagged at the edge of Petra's mind these days. I've got a third at home, Omotoso said, tousling the tight curls of one of her son's hair. People get jealous, you know, and there's no room. So even another level would be godsend. My eldest, you know, she wants to move out, start her own family, not inherit my house. But she doesn't want to live in another cluster. Well, Omotoso eyed Petra thoughtfully. First cluster, maybe, but she'd have to marry up. Or wrong someone, Petra thought. wrong them and contrive to be taken in by them. She wondered what Nash's living space had been like. If he, like Ahmad, took pride in his cracked and patched and atmosphere-leaking quarters in the old human ship. She wondered if he would rhapsodize about the noise of the hull, how it sang that it wasn't designed for atmosphere. Humans, Ahmad liked to say, and human inventions adapt well to circumstance. The Sioux adapted well to necessity. Circumstance took much longer. It is a wise use of resources, Ka'a said, and gestured certainty. Act well, Hurem Omotoso. As you shall, Sulai Ka'a, Omotoso said, and nodded to Petra as well, and continued on her way. For a moment, Petra wanted, irrationally, to stop her. Ask, for all their failings, you're glad to live with the Sioux, aren't you? They're different, yes, but this is possible. It doesn't have to be thrown away. But this was not an argument to be had with strangers. Petra's soft desperation was her own. She followed Ka'a to the access nub at the end of a terminal hall. Ka'a, without ceremony, pressed her claws into the wall at the nub, and a stream of energy surged through her. Petra stepped up and pressed her hands into the wall across the nub from her, and closed her eyes and called up the lightning. The nub expanded like a bubble, stretching out into the atmosphere and accreting material. Far beneath their feet, toward the center of the colony, the colony's organs chewed at the mineral substrate beneath them and reprocessed it into usable form. Now, crops and stomachs full of smart matter disgorged their contents and sent it crawling in waves toward the maker's call. The static matter of the existing colony walls hummed in recognition. Petra could feel every one of them echoing in her awareness, as though she was one limb of a colony and the walls were part of her body, sluggish and slow, but movable with nothing but thought and energy and effort. The nub grew to encompass them, Ka'a and Petra both, flooding the area with oxygen-rich atmosphere and moving them out of the insulation of the colony into the maelstrom of storm and smart matter, where stability sat behind them and potential all around. And together, Ka'a and Petra began to make. The colony had always grown like a fern, uncoiling, and Petra found it hard to imagine ferns and fauna growing outside. Still, she had toured the oxygen facilities, like most classes of her generation, and ferns grew in some variety in the gardens. The human colony ship had brought its own miniature ecosystem for air purification, and the Sioux had been happy to integrate that system into their colony and research it for any new information on how to optimize the plants they'd scavenged from their own vanished biomes. Petra didn't visit the facilities often, but she remembered them in brilliant greens, reds brighter than blood, yellows cleaner and softer than the atmosphere outside. After spending enough time in her head, or casting her thoughts outward, forming the colony walls, it took time for color to seep back into Petra's awareness. She could see the walls, but they were the meaningless shapes they'd be if she stared at a spot until her eyes canceled its contrast out. But she came back to herself, in time. Here, in third cluster, there were patterns inlaid in the floor, murals, windows, all the things the human population did to make the colony habitable. There were windows through which you could see the roiling clouds, or the battered landscape, when the clouds lifted enough that the ghostly shapes of rocks and craters could be seen. Sometimes Petra could see vast shapes moving in the distance, not quite the way the clouds moved, and wonder if they were some echo of the vanished ecosystem the Sioux had clambered out of. Sometimes, Petra wondered what the hell the Sioux had done to this place. Sometimes, she wondered what it had been like to be on that first ship, watching the gamble pay off, how they had felt as they saw their potential near Earth resolve into a tangle of yellow clouds and fierce winds. Petra had never been out through the old, crumbling habitat spaces that had covered the ship like a blanket. She had no reason to do so. The Sioux didn't find the ship of much historical interest, and her parents hadn't been willing to go through the hassle of compensating for the damaged environment in those areas. Suiting up, taking medical packs and lights, traveling out past the well-maintained central Sioux spaces to a ship that would never fly again. They had books, images, videos, holos, history preserved for digestion in everything but physical presence. The ship was roughly as real to her as Earth was. Nothing like the colony, solid and present under her shaking limbs, a vast map of power and potential to her sensing mind. She could lean back into it, let it soak up the tremors in her muscles. Her fine motor control was shot. Humans hadn't been meant to shape this kind of energy. But Petra among them had been made. One of the first attempts, a grand experiment toward the full participation of humanity in the colony. Ahmad had said once that that privilege made her uncaring. You've got yours, so fuck the rest of us. But Petra couldn't breathe without the awareness that she was judged by the Sioux as a possibility. She'd been representing humanity in the court of Sioux opinion for her entire productive life. Sulai Ka'a had finished her own work and turned to Petra, forelimbs crossing over each other, out of the way. You are well? She asked. She'd asked 1,000 times before, and would ask 1,000 times again, so long as they worked on the same projects. I will be, Petra said. Sulai Ka'a gestured understanding. Our work will benefit many, she said. I look forward to its completion, Petra answered. And with their goodbyes said, Ka'a wandered off. Petra's work had a way of scouring all the petty day-to-day concerns of her life out of her mind. She'd become used to coming home feeling drained, pleasantly empty. At least, empty in a way she could convince herself was pleasant, because none of the pollution in her mind, the grudges and doubts and recriminations, seemed to survive. Unfortunately, it looked like the business with Nash was more persistent than the day-to-day annoyances of being her. She pushed it away. It's done. I've made my decision. It's nothing to do with me until he starts something. And then she rounded the last curve in the corridor to see Elaine walking out of her quarters. An uneasy stiffness went up Petra's spine. She'd never removed Elaine's access permissions from her doors. She'd always said Elaine was welcome any time. But seeing her there, emerging, unannounced, hooked jealousy into her diaphragm and tugged. Elaine saw her and pursed her lips before forcing them into a smile. Petra, she said, and crossed the hall and took Petra's shoulders. Petra tried to relax them. We need to talk. It's good to see you, Petra said, though woodenly. I wish I saw you more often, Elaine said. I'm sure, Petra thought, and her diaphragm tugged again insistently. But you don't come by, do you? Not until Nash winds up here. I wish you did, she said. It wasn't Elaine's fault, after all. Elaine wasn't the one who'd ended things between them. Elaine wasn't the one who'd established a carefully constructed distance,
measured out degrees of separation like they were insulators. That was all on Petra's head. The jealousy didn't care if Petra had no one to blame but herself.
Coffee? Elaine asked.
Petra bit on nothing. I've probably just made some more enemies. And I've never cared.
Coffee?
There wasn't any question, really. Petra nodded and gestured along down the hall.
Please.
The corridors in this section were all separated into levels, with slopes up at the perimeter and at places that had been the perimeter before colony growth had overtaken it. That was how you could tell it was a human sector. At least, it was one of the ways. The Sioux had no issues with clambering up and down wherever they found it most expedient, not caring much whether one room shared an elevation with another chamber adjacent to it. But they designed these sectors after the floors stacked atop each other layout of the human ship. The commissary was little more than a food receptacle with an open chamber adjoined to it. A colonist could go and select the food they wanted and eat communally, if they so chose. The chairs and tables were a human invention. The space to prepare food and the modules that heated or cooled food on demand had been Sioux gestures of goodwill to accommodate human taste. The Sioux didn't have the breadth of culinary aesthetics that the human population had. Petra and Elaine went to a hot receptacle and got bulbs of coffee, a thin, dark liquid that tasted vegetative and burnt. She had to wonder if it bore any resemblance to the coffee the colonists had remembered from Earth, if this was a replica. Sioux ingenuity and human gengineering, or just some poor substitute carrying a name that meant almost nothing.
I don't want to talk about Nash, Petra said, and found a table.
This commissary was empty. In general, the people with rooms in this area tended to have nicer places to eat.
Elaine followed her, but paused at her words.
Neither do I, she admitted. But, you know, you shut me down when it's not about business. Nash is business. Despite the heat of the coffee in her hands, despite the sensation of lightning over the habitat, Petra felt cold.
Why is Nash your business?
Because he threatens colony harmony, Elaine said, and my rank theoretically obliges me to be conscious of that.
Petra blinked at her, then cracked a thin smile.
How long did it take you to come up with that excuse? Oh, I've been holding it in my pocket, Elaine admitted. Not that it's any less true.
You're not a social engineer. You're a medical worker.
And you're a construction specialist, Sulai,
Elaine pointed out.
Not a warden or a rehabilitator. Looks like today's the day we wake up with new vocations.
Petra set her coffee on the table.
Elaine hadn't taken a seat yet, and she didn't. Instead, she came around the table and pressed her hands into Petra's shoulders. And then she pressed, her Sioux-engineered powers coming down through Petra like a wave. Petra could sense the lightning, sense the chattering patterns of electricity racing through the walls, the floor, here and there through the air. But none of it was like the golden warmth of Elaine's hands and Elaine's power moving through her. Putting right, it felt, all the cells that had been excited or singed by Petra's work. Petra melted, sinking onto the table with a mew.
Elaine.
You haven't been taking care of yourself, Elaine pointed out. Petra grimaced, though the expression melted away.
I'm still here, aren't I?
So's the pitted, pockmarked ground, Elaine said. That means nothing. Then she ducked and pressed her lips against Petra's jaw. Petra caught her breath.
I don't want to talk about Nash, Elaine said, and Petra felt her shoulders trying to stiffen up again, but the tension was chased away by Elaine's hands.
I want to talk about you. Do you know what you're doing?
Petra let out a weak laugh.
Ahmad came to me, she said, and felt Elaine's fingers pause on her muscles. Nash was going to be executed. No one else in the colony was going to speak for him. Can you believe it?
A moment passed before Elaine said, No, actually.
He must have gotten a lot better at making enemies. But we're talking about you, Pet.
Once I knew about it, Petra said.
She tried to make her voice like the end of an argument.
If I knew about it and didn't stop, I'd be complicit in his death. Or I could stop it and end up owning the man. Those were my choices, kill him or own him.
You still blame him, Elaine started.
Petra pulled herself out of the chair, out of Elaine's grip. The sense of the storm closed in around her awareness again, an angry backdrop. It felt like coming home to herself. She turned to look Elaine in the eyes.
You don't?
Pet, Elaine said.
She stepped forward, bringing them almost body to body, and cradled Petra's head in carefully poised fingers. She washed away the chaos of the lightning again.
All right. Your choices are rotten. But you're going to burn yourself to death in anger here if you don't end up killing him yourself. Something has to change.
If you have any suggestions, Petra said.
Elaine said nothing.
Thought not, Petra said, but it was difficult to be mad at her. Especially difficult when Elaine's hands, Elaine's power, carved out a safe, quiet spot in Petra's head. Petra leaned forward, slipped her own hands onto Elaine's shoulders, slid them down toward her elbows. Tried not to feel like her hands, this contact between them, was a veiled threat.
Elaine, Suva Elaine, highest ranking in the colony, could reach into a person's body and direct, in broad strokes, the growth of cells, the patterns of immune response, the firing of synapses. Sulai Petra, one rank below as the Sioux recognized it, could only control the lightning. A strong skill, a maker skill, when it came to directing the responsive material of the habitats, feeding the biomat infrastructure with power. The Suva, Sioux fathers, could create new Sioux life, but the makers could control the colony. More people than the Sioux valued that. Petra could reach into the sky and blast lightning through Elaine. No matter the insulation in the walls, no matter the carefully constructed cages she was afforded as a human maker, there was always a conductive line from the towers through the habitats, because without the possibility of access, the makers couldn't make. And while she'd never hurt Elaine, had never, would never, their being who and what they were had brought harm to Elaine. Petra's willingness to take Nash into their lives had channeled hurt right to her. Like Petra was only the conduit through which harm coursed. Pet, Elaine said, I do love you. You know that, right?
I love you, Petra said, and her hands tightened on Elaine's arms.
Her proximity, her sheer physical presence, drove Petra's mind back to Elaine in cords. Elaine, hidden in the atmosphere leaking, ill-powered cast-off modules of the colony. Elaine, bound by conductive wire to her captor, her image on an encrypted and bounced data stream, her life reduced to leverage.
and Petra hammering out messages to a data address she suspected represented nothing.
Nash, please. What did you do, Nash? Please help. Please.
I love you, Petra said again. And Elaine didn't protest her hands, fear tight.
I'll figure this out, Elaine. What happened before isn't going to happen again.
Pet, Elaine said, voice like mourning. She probably meant to say, that's not what I'm afraid of, not at all. But Petra's mind was circling around. He won't get away with it again. I'll watch him. He ought to pay for what he's done.